Just as my average preparation session for a fight does not involve considering 12-foot kung fu leaps from knife-throwing masters, I guess Madrigal's practices didn't take into account floors that might suddenly become pools of nearly frictionless dust. He let out a shriek and plunged into it, flailing wildly. I could see the wheels spinning in his head, trying to work out what had happened and how the hell he would get out of it. Ramirez shot a look over his shoulder and snarled, "Harry!" The fingers of my right hand were tingling. I raised it, clenching it into a weak fist. It was good enough to align the rings with my thoughts. "Go!" Madrigal had worked it out. He thrashed to one side of the trough Ramirez's spell had eaten in the floor, thrust the handle of his spear down into the ultrafine dust, and shoved himself roughly up and out of the sand trap. But not before Ramirez drew the Silver Warden's blade from his hip, the sword designed to let the Wardens of the White Council slice into any enchantment, unraveling it with a single stroke. Carlos drew it, lunged out onto his wounded leg with a cry of pain and challenge, and sliced the willow blade left and right at Madrigal while the spear was grounded and locked into place, supporting him. The sword cut through the wooden haft of the spear, snicker-snack, which was itself an indicator of just how unbelievably sharp an edge it had to have carried. Lucio did good work. That was just collateral damage, though. The warden blade also licked lightly across each of Madrigal's arms. The black cloth armbands erupted into sudden flame, the embroidered symbols on them flaring into painfully brilliant light, as if the scarlet thread had been made of magnesium. Any construct that held enough energy to counteract the magic of a major league wizard, especially a combat specialist like Ramirez, had to have been holding all kinds of energy. Ramirez had just cut it loose. Madrigal stared down in sudden panic at the fire writhing up his arms and let out a horrified scream. I crouched, clenched my fist a little tighter, narrowed my eyes, and with a single thought released every bit of energy in the rings, what had been left over after the ghoul attack and what I had added later, all at the same time. The power hit Madrigal low in the belly at a slightly upward angle. It slammed him from his feet as the fire blazed over his arms, lifting him up over the heads of the gathered wraith contingent like a living, sizzling comet, and slammed him into the cavern wall behind them with literally bone-shattering power. Broken, bleeding wreckage tumbled limply down.
"And the wizards," I snarled, "pick up the spare."
I turned back to face Vito, who was only then clawing his way out of a pile of confused and unhappy Scabus and Malvora vampires and meekly passive thralls. He came to his feet with his sword in hand. I faced him through the glowing dome. I heard a grunt, and then Ramirez stepped up beside me, silver sword in hand, still stained with Madrigal's pinkish blood, his staff in the other, taking some of the weight from his injured foot. I kept the dome up, recovered my blasting rod, and raised it, calling up my will, letting fire illuminate the runes carved down its length, one sigil at a time. The new shield was more taxing than the old, and I was getting tired, but there was nothing to do about that but keep going. There were rustling sounds all around us. Vampires came to their feet. They edged closer to the thralls, shifted position so that they would be able to see. There were murmurs and whispers all around us as the White Court sensed that the end was near. Vito's aunt was not far from him, and she stood with one hand to her delicate throat. But she stood fast, watching, anxiety and calculation warring for space in her eyes. Over one shoulder, I could just barely make out Lara's profile as she leaned forward over the thrall kneeling between her and the fight, Justine, to watch the end, her lips parted and glistening wet, her eyes glowing. The spectacle of it sickened me, but I thought I understood something of what triggered it in them. Death did not come swiftly to vampires, but the old Reaper was in the house, and when he struck, he would take lives that should have lasted for centuries more. That realization let me understand something else about the White Court, that for all of their allure,
that forbidden attraction, the unnatural magnetism of a creature so beautiful outside and so twisted within, with their ability to give you the greatest pleasure of your life, even as they snuffed it out. They, the vampires themselves, were not immune to that dark attraction. They were regular, near eternal voyeurs to death's handiwork, after all. They saw the mingled ecstasy and terror on the faces of those they took. They fed upon the surrender of life and passion to the endless silence, knowing, all the while, that in the end, they were no different. One day, one night, it would be their turn to face the scythe and the dark cowl, and that they would fall just as helplessly as their own prey had, over and over and over.